Well, I like the answer, but I tell you what, the thought you've triggered in me, which I'm sure Nikki will be on the same flow as well. Do you remember, Nikki, when Amos, after I had my hypnotherapy to try to release my fear, and I was going to fly to Sweden for the first time, and he told me, don't make up stories. And when I asked him what he meant, he said, well, for example, even while you're driving to the airport, walking through the airport, checking in, you are not flying. So you shouldn't be making up a story about what's going to happen when you fly. And then when you get on this plane, you shouldn't be making up a story about what could happen during the flight. And that kind of came into my mind as you were talking, because, and I think you said virtually the same thing, is you make, sometimes your mind makes a story to fit the situation. So I am afraid of flying, therefore I have to create a story to give me a reason to be afraid of flying, because otherwise it's not logical that I have this fear. And I felt that you were saying that you have an experience that you can't explain, and therefore, depending on what your belief system is, you will then create a, would you say, perhaps a memory or a feeling of having been abducted by aliens.
Yeah, if I wanted, let's say that it was in our culture, or it's sexy, or it's cool to be one of the abductees, and you thought you might get some attention on Twitter or Facebook or something by saying it happens to me all the time, then you might make it up, if you know what I mean. Sort of. And then, remember, UFOs only started to happen when we got technology. Before that, we interpreted them as something completely different. Graham Hancock writes very well about this. Yeah.
And wouldn't you think, though, as well, like, even if you're not making it up, you know, in anyone who's watched Ghostbusters, when they say, don't think of anything, and all he can think of is Mr. Stay Puft.
Yes.
Don't you think if your brain doesn't understand something, it will go back to a memory of a childhood or a book you've read or a film that really had an impression on you? So your brain could make the assumption that it was a UFO or it was a green man or something just because you don't understand what it really is.
Exactly, yeah. And a great way of thinking about this is that if you think about a two-dimensional world, which has got sideways, it's only got like length and breadth, it hasn't got height. If we were to pass through a two-dimensional world as three-dimensional beings, then as our feet go to it, they'd see two blobs which are feet, and those two blobs would then shrink as they get to our legs and get thicker and thicker as they go past our knees and our thighs, until it would go to one blob, which is our torso, and then two little blobs called arms would appear, and it would get up to our neck and then to our head. And so just by observing the passage of a three-dimensional being through a two-dimensional plane, you couldn't work out that that was a human being or an elephant or anything else, yeah? And in the same way, these other beings that pass through our dimensions and we interact with them, we can't see what they are. They look like sort of weird patterns. I get sort of almost like doily patterns when I get... it's almost like a DNA reprogramming that's going on. And it's really common. And the more I talk to everyone about experiences now, because the more and more you talk about it and don't sort of marginalise it, the more you find that these things are normal, they're not abnormal, and you're not going completely mad.
Wow. Because one thing that I've often wondered, and you can probably answer this, Tom, is I've never felt that my mind actually belongs in my body. I see my mind as being out in my etheric field. Do you know if scientists can find it within the body?
No, it can't be found. And that's one of the things, that the mind can't be found, the memory can't be found. And that's because it is holographic, it's kind of everywhere. And there's bits of it distributed all over our body and outside our body as well. And you know, in theory, you can have a mind without a body. So, and the body's just kind of a nice place for it to walk around in. So we can have the luxury and the experience of being in this wonderful three-dimensional world.
Well, of course, that's what it's like for a medium, is you send your mind backwards and then you can feel this presence with you. But whether that presence is another mind connecting to yours from a distance, I would find that very difficult to say. But, you know, I definitely feel something with me, and I definitely feel another mind, and that mind's thoughts are not the same as my thoughts, and their choice of words are not the same as my words. But, yeah.
And that's nice when you recognise that. It means you can work with it. And if you don't recognise it, kind of what happens is you can get a bit psychotic with it all. So I think the first step is to realise that these are real phenomenon, and they can be experienced, they can be interacted with. But also one of the things that is really important is if we're starting to run fears, when you start to be what we call supersensitive, when you run fears, you can also manifest those. And so it's important that when you get into this world, that you work with somebody that's got a bit of training that can help you and hold your hand through it all.
Kaz in the chat room is saying about feeling like she doesn't belong, and I know definitely as I've grown up, I felt before I kind of got on the spiritual path or the psychic path, mm-hmm. I kind of felt out of place, as if I had been chucked somewhere and people were talking a different language and I didn't quite know where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your take on kind of if we are, when we're spirit and we come through into different lifetimes, mm-hmm. on the memories that we bring with us, you know, how do you think it works when we incarnate?
Well, I'm writing a book about this. My next book, most of my books, by the way, I call them spiritual Trojan horses. So take the book on lightbulb moments. I wanted this to be read by people that wouldn't go into the mind, body, spirit section of a bookshop. So I've written it about ideas and how you ground ideas. But I could have easily entitled it How to Connect with Source. And the book Flavours of Thought is actually a contemporary exposition of the major arcana of the tarot, but I wanted it to be read by people that weren't tarot readers. And then my book Blocks is about writer's block, but it's really about karma. So the first three books I did were like wolves in sheep's clothing, if you like, and there's kind of two layers to them. My next book, I'm taking the gloves off and I'm just writing it as it is. And I've just written two chapters last week on exactly this topic. And the thing is, it doesn't matter which of these theories is right. It's what you do with it. Okay, this is where, to me, I don't feel the need to prove any of this stuff. I don't feel the need to go into a lab. And one of the problems when going into the lab situation to test this stuff, you end up forcing yourself into the left brain mode, which switches the phenomenon off. This is why many psychic tests can't be repeated, because the people that are doing them are working in left brain mode, and we resonate with each other. So if I'm in a situation where I'm talking about light bulb moments, everybody else will resonate with me and they'll have light bulb moments. If I was going to talk about something really dull like history and dates and all this sort of stuff, which completely switches you off, everyone else would get switched off, yeah? And then if someone was doing something really spacey, everyone might get into spacey mode, if you like. So two ways to think about how you incarnate. Either our DNA is a resonator, and that we resonate with people that are like ourselves and like our parents and like our grandparents. And therefore, you might be picking up past life experiences through resonant DNA. So, and think of the DNA as a tuning fork. The person that you most resonate with is the person that's you but a second old, or you or a minute old, or you and an hour old, and that's why you have memory. But the person you also resonate very strongly with is you an hour from now, or you a month from now, or you a year from now, which is why you can tune into your future self so easily using a future life progression. So it could be that we're just there is no spirit, it's all imagined. And it doesn't matter if that's it, so long as we do something with it. So it's important that we just do something with it in our physical world. And if imagining it allows you to do great works of art or write or heal, then who cares whether it's real or not, so long as you're being ethical about it. Yeah? Who cares whether Reiki energy is real if it has the right effect? Who cares if me placing a hand over someone who had about to have a new skin graft operation, and then she went to the doctor the next day and he said, you don't need it now, it's all completely healed. Who cares if that is Reiki energy, or it's coming through me, or it's that person? It doesn't matter, does it? It just works.
Yeah. Many years ago, when I first met my second husband, current husband, Tony,
mm-hmm.
he was going away on business and I got completely and utterly hysterical. which was very weird for a girl whose father had been in the London Ambulance Service since she was 8 and had never ever been used to having a man around the house all the time.
Yeah.
And when I married my first husband, he went on nights the first week we were back off our honeymoon, and I'm in a strange house on my own, unbothered. Then I meet Tony and I can't bear to let him out of my sight, and I get literally terrified. So as luck would have it, I had my friend Keith, who was a hypnotherapist, and over we went to see Keith, and he did some hypnosis. And he used to do, I'm going to count from 3 back to 0, tap you on the forehead, and you will be where this problem started. And I find myself in 1665, which I thought was weird. Cutting a long story short, at the end, when I came out of it, I said to Keith, can that possibly be real? Because I'm not a person that's ever felt the need for past life regression. He said, how do you feel? I said, fine. He said, you care that Tony's going away tomorrow? I said, no, not at all. He said, then what does it matter whether it was real or not? And I think that's really important, isn't it?
It is. And can I just add to that as well, is that when I did my past life regression course, I only did it not to become a past life regressor. I did it because I was just fascinated by the whole field. And I was kind of not even, I didn't even go as a skeptic. I didn't go pro or against. I was just interested in the whole thing. And the last thing I wanted to do or planned to do was actually do it. But I've ended up doing it, strangely enough. But I actually, spontaneously on my past life regression course, I started seeing the past lives in people's auras, right? And then I found other people that did that too. Then I found, I've done 2 workshops recently, where I found I can teach other people to see them too. Now the thing is, even though you can see them, it still doesn't prove that they're real. What's important is how you use that information in dealing with that person. And if that past life resonance is causing a blockage, and you can use that information to help that blockage go, and I've healed people instantly. I've had a woman in who was severely dyslexic, and it turned out that it was a past life that was dyslexic, and after half an hour she left, and she wrote her next book. She wrote her first book with loads of spelling mistakes in, and she wrote her next book without any.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was in a half hour session, right? So that works. Wow. So the other theory is then, the other theory, and this is just a theory, like the DNA thing's just a theory. I'm reading The Science Delusion at the moment by Rupert Sheldrake. She's great. It's a retort against Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, that science has got as dogmatic as religion that it tries to pan, which is just great fun. And so and there's billions and billions of pounds being spent on DNA research and sequencing the genome, and it still hasn't led anywhere, but they're all too embarrassed to admit it. They're all too embarrassed to admit that the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, it's not that that finds the particles. It's the scientists thinking that they might exist, manifesting the particle. So we imagine there's something beneath an atom, it appears. If we imagine there's something beneath a quark, it appears. And it's us imagining it into existence that makes it appear. It's not the other way around. Anyway, so another way of seeing it, Nikki, to answer your question, is that we don't incarnate as one being. So it's not like Tom has come back, and in this life he's Tom, and the next life he's Thomasina, and then he has a go at being Patrick, or he has a go at being an ant or elephant or something like that. Is that what happens is we incarnate as a number of soul parts. So more bits of the soul. We have a thing called the soul star, and our soul star can incarnate in multiple people at the same time, across space and time on different planets. And so what we are is we're a collection of bits of soul stars that we give a name, like Tom or Nikki or Deb or Darren or Gary. And what I've experienced in my therapy recently is that some of these soul parts come in for a certain job. Mainly the ones that we can let go are the ones that protect us, they keep us safe. And they're keeping us safe for many, many incarnations. And what you do is you say, you have a conversation with it and say, well, is your job been done? Do you want to stay? Do you want to go? And if you want to stay, you can stay, but we want you to transmute into a different energy, so you're working a different way. And if you want to go, we'll let you go back to the light and all that sort of stuff, or back to Mother Earth. And I've done what some people would call exorcisms, but I kind of call them soul part swap outs, if you know what I mean. So you say, well, let's say we're a mixture of 5 or 6 or 7 or more soul parts. When we get to a certain point in our life, when we move on, we say, well, actually, that bit there that's been holding us back, we don't need that anymore. So let's let that one go and let's install something else instead. And again, it doesn't matter if this is completely in our imagination. But the transformation that you get from doing it is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, well, I hadn't put the two things together. I hadn't thought of it as soul, as different soul parts. I've put it as me, as in Nikki in this lifetime. That was the way my brain put it in. But I had some shamanic work done a while ago, and there was this soul, a part of me who was this small child who was just really scared, hiding behind a rock. That was the image that I was given, really afraid of the world. And during this session, that scared little girl got pulled out, thanked for her part in the you know, what she'd achieved so far, and released into the light. And then this grown-up soul part came in, who was more capable in everyday life. And I hadn't put it in your same terms, but the effect was instantaneous.
Absolutely, from it's that, great, isn't it?
From that moment, the fear and the feeling like I needed to be protected had gone, and that feeling had got me into many a bullying relationship where people had taken control of me in return for allegedly keeping me safe. And as soon as I got rid of that soul, or, you know, released that soul part and brought in this new energy, everything changed.
Wow. The guys are asking about light bulb moments.
Should we do that?
Yeah. Well, we've got just 11 minutes before the break, but is that enough time, Tom?
Well, we can start, couldn't we?
We can just go on anyway, so don't worry. We'll just do the break when you're ready. Just give us a shout.
So light bulb moments. Think about light bulb moments as being future memories leaking back in time to your current self. And let me talk about, there's a blog about this on my blog, and there's two links I'm going to put in the chat room, and then we can extract, we'll unpack them later, but I'll shove them in straight away. This is what blocks light bulb moments, but I'll talk about it. So if any of our chakra points are blocked or inactive, that will stop a light bulb moment coming in. So if you're talking, so the many moment you're talking, you know, you want to have a think about something, you've got to stop talking to allow it to come in. That's your pineal gland getting blocked. If you've got a closed mind, it'll stop the light bulb moment coming through your crown. They tend to come through your crown or through your cerebellum at the back of the skull. If you're talking, the very moment of talking stops them. If you're not loved, so you're in a job when somebody doesn't love you, don't respect you, or a relationship where you're not loved, that will block light bulb moments. If you're fearful, that will block light bulb moments too. And if you're hungry, that'll block them. And if you're in pain, that will block them. So they come in when you least expect them, but I've developed a few methodologies where you can just generate them on demand. And one of the best methodologies, funnily enough, is mind mapping. And I'm as pleased as punch. You couldn't plan this, could you? But today, Tony Brazan has just published a blog of mine about how I had a light bulb moment when I was writing my light bulb moment book that led to what I'm doing right now. Because you can't plan what I'm doing now, and it all came about from a single word mind map. But the thing that encourages them is being in that meditative state. So when you get into the state where you make your mind go quiet and you stop that internal chatter, that encourages them to come through. Mind mapping encourages them to come through. Just being in a generative environment where people have been loads and loads of ideas encourages them to come through. Or collaborating, you know. So if any of us were to get together. And you know, when you go to networking meetings, business networking, people say, "Oh, what do you do?" And you say, "Well, I'm an accountant, or I'm a web designer, or something like that." Instead of asking the question, "What do you do?" Ask the question of "What could we do?" And you find just by combining forces, brand new things can be created. So up to me, light bulb moments are future memories. They come in inside space and time. So, you know, you know they're different from a conventional thought because all your chakra points fire up at the same time. So your gut falls in love with it. Your heart, your gut tells you it's right. Your heart falls in love with it. Your left brain sees the detail. Your right brain sees the whole. You can even check in with Mother Earth as well through your root chakra and check that it's safe and ecological. And so everything goes off at the same time. And you have them kind of outside time, so they just, you have one at night time, you just want to get up and write it all down because it's so exciting and everything's firing in your body. Does that explain them? That's light bulb moments in 5 minutes. How about that?
That's fantastic. But yeah, that synchronicity seems to be so key, because Nikki can tell you sometimes if you work with me, I can be a total pain in the arse. If you start talking about a simple concept and I'm 5 years ahead and I can see it,
mm-hmm.
and it can even overwhelm me when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I suppose, partly is a light bulb moment, is actually mm-hmm. seeing it in the future,
mm-hmm.
and feeling that it was A, already there, and B, is going to happen. Would that make sense?
It does, yeah. And that my book's in two halves. The first half is the art bit of it. What artful state do you have to get into to experience them? And then I'm sure loads of people listening will have had that experience where you've had an idea, done nothing with it, and then 2 years later you see someone doing it. You go, oh, that's my idea. Well, what's happened is you've popped back into the super consciousness, and or your idea has not been worked on. It's popped back into the super consciousness. And someone else has had it instead of you, you know. So basically, there's a science to grounding them and making them real, and that's really what the second half of the book's all about.